Short Hops, Derek Van Riper here with Bernie Pleskov after a one-week layoff. Glad to be back at it again here as we close out the first full week of spring training. Bernie, how you doing today?
Hey, Derek. I was on the DL last week, and I'm probably still going to be on it for a little while. But, you know, I'm doing much better, and we will continue to do Short Hops. We may have an interruption every now and again. I certainly hope not. I'm a little hoarse today, so bear with me. I think this is going to be a long show because we've got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, tons of ground to cover. And again, any sort of schedule-related issues that we have, we'll try to tweet them out. At Short Hops, we'll always have the updates. I'll try to send those out from my account, at Derek Van Riper. It's just so everybody's in the loop as far as any adjustments. It's also that time of year. It's draft season. So there might be a week where we can't record on Wednesday, but we record on Friday, which is the case today. So we'll be there. It's just going to be a little bit flexible, and we'll try to keep everybody in the loop as best we can. But Bernie, let's start off with Josh Hamilton. The news coming down this week that he is going to face a 25-game suspension. Could be as few as 15 based on the joint drug agreement. But as many people know, Josh Hamilton has battled drug addiction throughout his life, and most recently actually did have a relapse. The good news is he appears to be in good spirits. Things are at least trending back in the right direction, which Hamilton's stage, I think more about what he's going to do as a person, like his life and the importance of just staying clean as opposed to getting Hamilton back on the baseball field as quickly as possible.
DVR, in my entire life, I've never been a part of a drug culture or even alcohol. But I had a friend in high school who was the most brilliant guy I had ever been around. And I never caught up with him again until maybe 10 years ago when I moved to Phoenix. And he had moved here. He went through college as an addict. He was arrested, incarcerated. And he told me at that time that he was a cocaine user and that the toughest thing he has ever done in his life. He aced every test. He could have done anything he wanted with his life. The toughest thing is to live every single day and not want cocaine. And he said he battles that battle 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's gripping. And again, like Hamilton, you know, he went back and used one time and it put him right back into it. So my heart goes out to anybody that has afflicted with this. It's very difficult. So I think Major League Baseball has been very compassionate with Josh Hamilton. It's a horrible situation on top of the fact that he has injury issues. So let's wish the best for him regardless. Let's not judge him because we are not walking in his shoes. I just hope that, as you said, his life gets straightened out. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, that's priority number one. Hopefully that includes getting back on the baseball field at some point in the not-so-distant future, but just want Hamilton to be healthy and to make sure everything is right with him and of course, at home, too. Obviously, a major stressor as far as just being a dad and a husband. It's a lot for the entire family to deal with in a situation like that. Now, a lot has happened since we last spoke a couple weeks ago. Yoan Moncada has signed with the Red Sox. The Red Sox giving him a $31.5 million signing bonus, which means they're also going to give Major League Baseball a $31.5 million penalty, which is just, it's a big cash outlay for a player that obviously hasn't been really seen against advanced competition, $62 million in total. But Moncada, the type of player, Bernie, who could emerge to be possibly the best of the crop that we've seen from Cuba over the past decade.
It's very possible, although you're taking a chance, no matter who it is, because playing in Cuba and playing in the United States are totally different. The thing that fascinated me about this is, well, two things. Number one, they have no current position for this young man. You know, shortstop is taken, second base is taken, everybody in the outfield and their brother is playing in the outfield. So what they have now is the luxury of being able to send him down to the minor leagues to transition into American baseball. I don't think he breaks with the club at all. He could be, you know, in AAA or AA a year, maybe even more. But they took a player that they think is going to be great, and they're looking for the future. The other thing about a DVR is they kept him away from the Yankees. The Yankees clearly had a need for him at either shortstop or second base or both. But yet they kept him away from the Yankees. I don't know if it was dollars or what it was, or if the Yankees just said no at the last dollar. But they win both ways. The Red Sox get the player and the Yankees don't. So I think it's a fascinating deal, and it just shows you how depth is so critical in baseball. Now if they want to trade someone as he gets better and better, they move him to the big leagues, and you could trade a Bogarts if you want. You never know what they're going to do. So it's an exciting player coming to a team that really added depth and not need.
Yeah, the rich get richer, and I think the temptation for a lot of teams would have been to possibly rush Moncada to the big leagues at some point in 2015. I don't think that happens at all in Boston. I think 2016 is the earliest we would see him now.
I totally agree, and I think from a fantasy standpoint, keeper league is your way to go. Not even an AL-only league, because I do not see them, with the depth that they have at every position, I don't see him supplanting someone unless they make a major trade and put one of those huge guys in a deal for Cole Hamels, which is possible, but Moncada still is the unknown. They don't know what he can do yet. So I don't see it happening right away. I think he's going to start the season in AAA or AA, and then we'll go from there.
The Red Sox still look like that team that could put together the best possible package to get Cole Hamels from the Phillies, and having Moncada in tow certainly makes even more depth expendable than before. But one other smaller item that came by from the Red Sox is from manager John Farrell, suggesting that Shane Victorino is going to be the starting right fielder. Just a quick thought on that. I mean, do you believe Farrell when he says that, or do you think it's really just a way of saying, look, hey, Shane Victorino is the veteran here. Mookie Betts has to earn his spot, and maybe we can move Betts around and have him play multiple spots. Like, what do you think the purpose was of Farrell saying that Victorino was going to be the starter in right field if he's healthy?
I was shocked at that, but they have a lot of money invested in him. He is a veteran player. There is some respect that goes along with that. I'm not sure he's going to play every day, and I don't know that he's going to be healthy enough to play. Mookie Betts has got to play, for me, every single game that he can. Now, if that means spotting him at second base instead of Pedroia now and again, putting him in the outfield, Mookie Betts is that good a talent that he has got to play. He's not going to get better sitting on the bench. Shane Victorino, to me, is not in the same class anymore as he once was, and I do think he's an injury risk. I'm a little skeptical that he starts this season in right field. He may, but let's see how long it takes for them to start platooning, running guys in and out. Look, it's very early in spring training. We haven't seen the trades that I think the Red Sox will still make because of the depth they have in the outfield.
I think it can be a very busy trade spring, really. You don't usually see that many deals this time of year, but there's a handful of other things that have created some needs on a few teams. We'll get to those as we move through this episode. I want to talk about Kenley Jansen, Bernie. He's on track to miss about 7 to 11 more weeks after surgery last week to remove a bone growth from his foot. Obviously, the timetable originally 8 to 12 weeks. He's now in a walking boot. We're 1 week into that. Where do the Dodgers go of their internal options if they're not going to bring in a Rafael Soriano, for example? Who closes for the Dodgers while Jansen recovers from this injury?
You're not going to like what I tell you, but I think it's going to be Brandon Leake.
Come on, no way. Brandon Leake?
I think it's going to be Brandon Leake. Don't quote me on that. He's got closing experience. It's within the realm of possibility. Let me put it that way. Simply because he's done it before. We have just seen the Achilles heel of the Dodgers exposed. We have just seen the issue that we have talked about for a long time with the Dodgers exposed. And that is no true closer if their closer got hurt. And that has happened. Now, Soriano's still out there. I don't know what they're waiting for. Maybe Soriano's done. I haven't seen him throw. But are we looking at, who beyond Brandon Leake do we have there? I don't know. It's not the name you wanted to hear. Joel Peralta, not much better, is he?
I like
when you
Peralta.
think about it?
I like Peralta a lot more than Leak, but I do wonder if because Andrew Friedman is familiar with Peralta, and in instances when the Rays needed someone to close, Peralta wasn't that guy, if that same construct holds up with the Dodgers. But to be completely honest, if you said I could choose the closer, I would choose Sergio Santos ahead of Brandon Leak, assuming he's healthy. I would choose David Ardsma as long as he's healthy. Those guys are both non-roster guys. I would take Pedro Baez and Chris Hatcher and JP Howell.
I agree with you, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to give the ball to Brandon Leak. You know, it's just a crazy feeling I have. I may be totally off base. I think he's going to get a shot at a DVR, and we'll find out. He may not keep the job, but I think he's going to get his shot at it. I like all the guys. I like Ardsma. I like all the guys you mentioned.
I will never feel sorry for Dodgers fans, by the way, but this is the type of thing, if they were to use Leak as their closer, just from the logic standpoint, where I would actually feel bad for just a passing moment for Dodgers fans.
Now that's just me talking. I don't know. I don't have any inside information. I just know that teams like guys that have been there and done that. And Leak did do it with Seattle, and who knows? You know, Juan Nicasio was there too, right?
Yeah,
they've got a lot of guys.
Nicasio as a reliever is interesting. Even Nicasio as a possible depth starter out of Colorado. I mean, I liked him a few years ago before he had the neck injury. I thought there was some potential there. So they have a few different ways they can attack it. Dustin McGowan signed with them recently. Maybe they can do something to make him useful. I would trust McGowan ahead of Brandon Leak. I mean, it's pretty much anybody who is in camp with an arm that works. I would be more inclined to use that person than Brandon Leak, but I think I've made my point.
Yeah, but I guess my point is this is a flawed situation. This bullpen has not been corrected. And it's a similar situation that could hit the Tigers, although they have Soria there. There is no backup here to Jensen. You know, this is an issue.
Yeah, definitely not a clear-cut guy at the ready. One other Dodgers note I wanted to point out, Zach Greinke, news came down last weekend that he had a lubricating injection for his elbow. And I think the initial response to something like that is to panic, but the fact of the matter is he's fine. It's preventative maintenance. It's something he's done every year he's been with the club. I just wanted to make a mention of that in case any of the listeners out there had seen that scroll by and thought that there was a reason to downgrade Zach Greinke. He seems
Doesn't
to be he's throwing, he's doing everything the way he normally would now. So there's no action required as far as that injection for Zach Greinke goes. But staying with the theme of pitching, Adam Wainwright flew back to St. Louis this week due to abdominal soreness. We found out the injury was diagnosed as a strain, and he is considered day-to-day. Fortunately, it's nothing with his elbow. Fortunately, it's not a core muscle repair type situation where he's going to have some kind of surgery, just a day-to-day injury, a strain that he suffered while working out. Should be back in some capacity within the next week or so. But Wainwright, I think we talked about him when we were previewing and ranking all of our top starting pitching, Bernie. He's the kind of guy that I worry about because so much of his value has been tied up in being a workhorse. Last year, the strikeout rate came down. I just don't know if you can get a complete season from Wainwright to where the strikeout rate gets back to where it was or is able to sustain that previous workload. I think something continues to give with him.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you did mention that, and that you have a yellow caution light, and I was less cautious than you are. Here's my concern now. If, in fact, he has an abdominal strain, and if, in fact, he gets on that mound, could he compensate his landing and his delivery and mess up his mechanics, hurt his elbow or his forearm? That's my concern now. It's not the elbow per se. It's what could happen if he compensates for the abdominal strain by changing his mechanics. And we do it all the time. The analogy I always give you, DVR, is walking around with a pebble in your shoe.
Mm-hmm.
You don't walk around the same way. You change the way you walk, even though it's a little pebble. Now, if this little pebble is an abdominal strain and he tweaks his delivery ever so much, what does that do to straining his elbow or his forearm or his shoulder. So caution light is up. I'm not worried, but, you know, let's blink the yellow for now.
Yeah, that's exactly process-wise. That's what happened to Justin Verlander following the core muscle repair surgery last year. So even though there's no surgery for Wainwright, the impact of an injury like this on mechanics is really difficult to sort out. You kind of have to see it. You have to watch him and probably even compare side-by-side video of Wainwright in March of this year versus the end of last season and just see if anything is clearly different about how he's delivering the ball. Let's move on to Jurickson Profar, Bernie. He's going to miss the 2015 season. Maybe comes back late in the year, but he had surgery to repair a torn labrum, missed all of last year with the shoulder problem. And this has turned into a pretty rough 24-month patch now for Jurickson Profar, who, by many accounts, 2 years ago people would have said, hey, he's going to be a star. He's going to be great in 2015. He's going to be a big part of the success of the Rangers. And now we may not see him again until 2016.
This is another real shame. Now, I was never a huge fan because I felt they rushed him, and I said it at the time. I didn't have any shares of him. I just felt he was a very good ball player, not a superstar. But then to go down with his shoulder and miss 2 years of development time, still very young, still has career ahead of him. But what's the impact going to be when he gets back in 2017? We're going to have to put it on the shelf for now, let him recover totally, not rush him. He's got his whole career ahead of him. Very, very good ball player. I like him better in center field now than I do at shortstop because of the arm issues.
Yeah, still a very bright future, as you said, and we're talking about a player who just turned 22. I mean, that's amazing for a guy that debuted 3 years ago. At the end of 2012, he got 9 games with the Rangers, too. I think I'm one of the people that forgot that that even happened, but still a guy that I think long-term, if he comes back healthy, double-digit home runs, maybe even high teens in terms of home runs. I think he could steal some bases and be a good source of batting average. If you're in a dynasty league and he gets thrown back into the pool, if you could buy him cheap now, stash him away for a year, the payoff could still be there.
Well, that's the key. It's what you have to pay for that. And I'm not sure he's going to be playing shortstop. We'll see. You know, shoulder injuries are very, very tough to correct. We've talked about it over and over again. An elbow is an easier issue. A shoulder, a lot of things can go wrong, and your throwing may never be the same. And from shortstop in the hole, you've got to make that throw. You do in center field as well, but you can always use your cutoff man and help you there, and the cutoff man might go a little bit deeper. But his career is far from over. He's too good a talent.
Let's keep the theme here with the young, talented player, but we're going to talk about some guys that have no restrictions this spring. They're coming off of a variety of different injuries. First player I want to talk about, Bernie, Manny Machado. No restrictions whatsoever after his most recent knee injury late in 2014. And he looked like he was on the brink of a breakout before he went down last year. Without restrictions this spring, how optimistic are you about him in terms of his fantasy value here in 2015?
I think this is a terrific ball player. I really do. He's a doubles machine. If, in fact, that he doesn't feel like he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders because they lost a lot of offense with Markakis and Cruz, et cetera, and Wieters isn't going to be back for the start of the season, I don't think. If he can relax, enjoy playing the game, this is going to be a terrific ball player. And I think he is still a bit underrated for what he can do. And let's not forget, he was a shortstop that moved to third base, and it was like he played there all his life. At some point, he might slide back to shortstop if J.J. Hardy leaves. But I'm very bullish on him, and I think he's going to have a great year.
Yeah, I think 20 home run power is within range for this season. I think he's capable of doing that. I mean, 12 home runs last year in 82 games. Easy to see how that number could translate. And that's without further growth. He's just 22, will turn 23 in July. He's not even close necessarily to his physical peak yet. He could still be a couple of years off from that.
See, and the thing about him is that he uses those gaps so well. And he can run to the point where if you're in a league that values extra base hits, this is a guy you want to really look at because that's his strength. Yes, he'll hit some balls out of the park, and I agree with DVR at 20. That's a good number. Camden Yards is perfect for him. Just a very good buy because he's healthy.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to take a look at what he could do for this year. Now, I want to talk about Joey Votto, also in the No Restrictions Club. Such a polarizing player, and I can't figure out why. I mean, he doesn't hit for typical first baseman power year in and year out, and he draws a lot of walks. But if the Reds had a better offense around him, I don't think Votto would be a lightning rod for criticism. Like, I think the expectations of what he would be able to do by himself are just unfair regardless of whatever type of player he is. Even if he hit 35 home runs annually, the Reds wouldn't be a championship caliber team because of that. Like, Joey Votto's lack of power and his high on-base percentage are not the reasons why this team is struggling.
I agree with you totally, and I'll take an on-base percentage guy any day of the week. That's a guy that wins ball games for you, and I hope they can win more. I think the criticism he took last week was totally unfounded. He is still one of the good hitters in baseball. I have always felt he's been overrated, and I've never had him in my top five first baseman, but I respect his game. I respect that he doesn't swing at bad pitches. Look, Ted Williams never swung at bad pitches, and they never said, why are you taking these bases on balls? Barry Bonds, same thing. Good hitters know the strike zone. And if this guy ever turns around and says to the umpire, I think you missed that, I think the umpire may have missed it. That's how good he is at recognizing pitches, recognizing strikes. The power will come. You know, he'll hit some doubles. He'll hit some home runs. He's not the greatest first baseman for me on the board, but I would not avoid having Joey Votto. It's just where I would get him. It's not in my top five. He's not in my top 10, but I really like him as a ball player.
I had to look back at Ted Williams' player page while you were talking about him right now just to see how extreme his patience was at the plate. I mean, you look back at some of the numbers Ted Williams put up. He had a 5.53 on base percentage in 1941. He walked 147 times that year.
I know.
That's more than Votto. I mean, that's more patience even than Votto, albeit with more power. He had 37 home runs that season, several 30 home run seasons from Ted Williams, even a 43 home run season in 1949. Oh, yeah, and he served in the military for 3 years in his age 24 to age 26 season. So who knows what he would have done in those 3 years?
See, and I'm not comparing Votto to Williams in power, but what I said was that type of hitter does not swing at bad pitches. And Williams is the poster boy, and Votto's right up there with him. You know, you look at him and you look at Sandoval. Sandoval doesn't swing at good pitches. He swings at any pitch. Now, that's not to say I prefer one to the other, but I actually do. I prefer a guy who's going to make me throw strikes and is going to get on base with that base on balls or a hit. And yes, in Little League, a walk is as good as a hit, and it sure is in the big leagues too.
Yeah, the Panda and Vlad Guerrero stand out as, for me, two guys that would swing at anything and could pretty much hit anything. I mean, that's the thing that always stood out to me with those two players. And obviously, Vlad has moved on, and now Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is someone that's on the radar in terms of being an international free agent signing for this summer. But you mentioned something about Votto. You said before that you've never really had him as a top five first baseman, that at least in fantasy terms, he's been overrated. Now he's ranked outside the top 10 by many people in terms of the first base rankings. And he also falls quite a bit in drafts, at least he has in the early ones I've seen. I mean, now that the price is probably 25, actually it's more than that, it's more like 50 picks later than usual based on where he's going right now. Do you think you'll have Votto on a few teams this year?
I tried to get him yesterday, but I was too late. Certainly, you know, if he drops far enough for me and I see that all my guys are gone, there's no doubt about it. He's not going to hurt you. You know, if you look at the expectations, and that is a league where they value on base percentage, like our grass ball league, he's perfect. Except that he's in the National League and our league's American League. That's the league you want to look at him in. But home runs, RBIs, I'm not sure.
Maybe that's the problem for me in grass ball. It's the American League. It's not the National League. Maybe that's why I haven't won that league yet. I don't know.
Well, don't worry about it, man. You're not going to win it this year either.
Probably not. And it's going to be sad because eventually I'm finally going to lose Mike Trout as a cheap keeper. That's the embarrassing thing is that with Trout, I have won zero league titles. And
but you can trade him to me still. There's still time.
I am not going to get good value in a trade for him. I'm going to still go You're for right. it. I'm going to try to win. I'm going to try to win a title again. I'm not going to sell out.
Good for you. It's going to be very competitive. It's a great league. It's one of the best I play in, and we talk about it all the time. And everybody in there is cutthroat, and I love it. I mean, they want to win.
Let's stay in the American League and stay at first base. Prince Fielder looks very healthy. Got a chance to see him take some batting practice on a video earlier this week. Took some big hacks. I mean, he looked like typical Fielder. It's batting practice, but to me, I think he's far enough removed from that neck surgery. The price is low enough. I like him a lot. I think he's a steal right now where he's going in drafts.
You know, Derek, we before the neck injury, and this is the thing I keep coming back to, before the neck injury, unless it was hidden from the public, he was in decline. Then the neck injury comes and his season is shut down. So now it's post-surgery, and is he the guy he was before? Or is he two-thirds of that? And what are you paying for two-thirds of what he was? I guess it depends on price, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, right now, if you look at his value, he's going probably 10 to 12 picks earlier than Votto. But Prince Fielder was a first-round pick this time last year. So he was going 50 picks earlier, just like Votto was. Like the scale is the same, where they've both been downgraded probably more than they should. Maybe a healthy spring training causes Fielder and Votto to move up around possibly two between now and when the majority of drafts are, closer to the start of the season. But I can't help but wonder that this injury may have been impacting him in 2013. I feel like I've seen reports that indicated he was bothered by this injury well before getting shut down and having surgery last year. I think 30 home runs, still the floor. The ceiling might be 40 in that park. I think you're going to have Shin-Soo Chu healthy somewhere in front of him in the lineup. I think the Rangers, some people have just buried them because things were awful in Texas last year. I think they have a lot of bounce back potential. I think any of the flaws you see in them now, those were flaws last year. They spent as much time on the DL as a team as any in baseball, if not a lot more than either team in baseball.
More.
Yeah, excessively more, right?
Yeah. But the issue with them is not going to be the bats. The issue is going to be pitching. You know, we've got to see what Yu Darvish can do. They've got a lot of question marks, and I'll see him in spring training. I want to see how Fielder looks. I'm as curious as anyone. Look, any guy that can hit the ball out of the park there in Texas, you want on your team. Home runs are scarce. They're tough to come by. He is still, he's still to be feared. So I want to see it for myself. I want to see his weight. I want to see the distribution of his legs, when he swings. We'll find out.
Two more players without restrictions this spring. Matt Latos coming off of knee and elbow injuries, doing that with a new team now that he's in Miami. Got to like the home park a lot better for his purposes. And I see a reason to be concerned about Latos breaking down again, given that he's got multiple injuries he's coming off of. But like the other players we're talking about here, price is pretty deflated. I wouldn't like Latos if he was being priced as a top 80, top 100 overall pick. But you can get him quite a bit later than that. He's kind of falling in that 175 to 200 range. At very least, I think you use him for the home starts and some of the road starts. But the NL East, for any pitcher facing the Braves and the Phillies several times in division, I feel like you should give those pitchers a slight bump up in terms of what they can bring.
I agree. And the park. The park's great for him. The only issue with him is going to be his health. You know, all the stuff of that he said about the Reds, etc. I wish he would not have done that. I don't think that's terribly professional, but that's his issue. My issue is, can he pitch and get hitters out? And if he shows he's healthy, why not? You know, any of those Florida pitchers are, as you said, they're going to face some weaker clubs. They're in a great division in a good ballpark. they're exciting to own.
And I think a lot of the drop-off in terms of his strikeout rate last year was the function of just not having stuff that was as good, lost 2 miles per hour off his fastball. That's what I'm looking for this spring. If I get a chance to see any of his starts on MLB Network or MLB TV, I want to see Matt Latos throwing that fastball in that 92 to 93 range again. If we see that, the velocity back up across the board, I'm going to have a few shares.
Yeah, well, our jury is out on him. Let's see what happens. But this is now his third club, if not, I'm not mistaken. So if he's that good, I wonder why he's moving around, but that's another story.
Yeah, it's a fair question to ask. Now, Michael Wacha, last pitcher in this group. No restrictions for Wacha. Faced some live hitters on Wednesday. It was pretty impressive, according to the local media reports out of St. Louis. This time last year, everybody seemed to love Wacha. I mean, he'd been coming off an impressive playoff performance in 2013, and the sky seemed like it was the limit. Had that major shoulder issue. Everything checked out okay late this offseason. No structural damage detected. Do you still have the caution light on with Wacha in terms of his health, or are you going to be on board with the rebound here this year?
Well, let's not forget, when I came back from Florida 2 years ago and I kept telling you about Michael Wacha, until I was making myself sick saying it. And then he came through, and then he got hurt. This is a guy that has to throw all of his repertoire. And if he can't do that, if he can't throw the changeup and the fastball the way he wants to, then he's going to be another guy. But Wacha has the potential to really be the ace of that staff, even with Wainwright there. Because Wainwright's, maybe on the decline a bit. Wacha should be on the rise. But those two guys together, and you've got a very good pitching staff with the, as it lengthens out. I'm buying Wacha because I believe he's healthy and I like his stuff.
Yeah, I'd like to try to target him where I can. ADP a little earlier than Latos, but similar in terms of the approximate round where you'd have to take them in a snake draft. Given the choice of the two, I think it's Wacha over Latos for me by a decent margin, just because.
Where does Lance Lynn fit in those three?
Lynn probably goes after them in most drafts. I'm going to take a look at his ADP. No, actually, Lynn goes the earliest of that bunch. I like Wacha the most.
Yeah. But I think he does go before those two. To me, they're very similar guys. But I would take Wacha and Lynn any day of the week because I just think they're bulldogs. They want to go out there and beat you.
I wonder with Lynn if the whip will ever get better. I mean, 126 last year was a slight improvement. But I just worry that he's still going to walk enough guys where that ratio is always going to be kind of below average, especially if you're in a shallow league. I think the deeper the league you're in, the more you can stomach having that. But yeah. I think if you're in a 10-team mixed league and you have a guy cranking out a 1.26 whip or even a 1.30 sort of whip, that's actually pretty bad in a shallow league.
Yeah, it is. It's going to hurt you. But everything else fits well. He's going to bring home some wins. His ERA will be okay. He'll strike out guys. He's a guy that we don't talk about enough, but I like him.
Yeah, it really doesn't seem like he gets that much attention. But, yeah, Lance Lynn definitely in that conversation if we're talking about Latos and Michael Wacha, guys you're looking at in the middle rounds of your draft. A few other news items I want to get to, Bernie. Hyun-Jin Ryu had an MRI on his back. It came back negative. He's describing his injury as back tightness. Any reason to be concerned?
Not for me. I've seen enough of this guy. He could have slept on a bad bed like I've done in the past. So who knows? I think it'll be okay. It's not his arm. It's not his shoulder. Again, you have to worry about compensation. Does he change his delivery? But this is too disciplined a player. Man, if you have ever seen him pitch in person, he's extremely disciplined. He is well taught. He is an extremely good pitcher. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, I think so too. Underrated. Strikeouts up last year. Walks were down. Kept the ball in the park very effectively. Plenty to like, I think, with Hyun-Jin Ryu.
A great changeup.
Yeah, really, really nice arsenal overall. Let's talk about Lucas Duda. He's not going to swing a bat for another week. He's actually been shut down for a few weeks already, dealing with an intercostal strain. I like Duda a decent amount because the Mets can strictly platoon him, and he hits righties very well. I think the power is legitimate. I think he's a borderline like star-type player performance-wise. Against righties. He has to sit against lefties because he can't hit them, But this injury worries me because he doesn't have much to fall back on as a fantasy player. If he's dealing with any sort of soreness, even if he's able to play on opening day and he's fine when the season starts, I just worry this is the type of injury that could sap some of his power. And if he goes from being a 30 home run guy to a 20 home run guy, there's a lot less there to be excited about.
I had him targeted yesterday in an auction, and I backed off simply because of the injury risk and the fact that he's a platoon player. But this guy has awesome power. And remember when it was Ike Davis, Lucas Duda duel at first base, and Duda clearly won that. Not a bad pick, again, at the right price.
Yeah, I definitely agree. As long as he doesn't, I don't know, as long as he doesn't command a premium, I'm okay taking him that chance, but I'm just not as high on him as I was a week ago before the news of this injury broke.
But Derek, those home runs are very exciting. You know, when you look at the dearth of home runs in the big leagues, and you look at Duda's numbers, and you say, at that place he's putting up those numbers, that's some real power.
Oh, I agree. I think the fences are coming in again at Citi Field this year, too, which will help really everybody in that lineup if that turns out to be a significant adjustment. Let's move on to Melvin Upton Jr., and if you haven't been tracking the story, it's B.J. Upton. He's no longer Boss Man Jr. Melvin Upton Jr., Atlanta Braves center fielder, will miss the opening series against the Mets, probably headed to the DL to begin the season. He's going to be in a walking boot for the next 4 to 6 weeks due to inflammation in his left foot. The only reason I had interest in Mr. Melvin Upton Jr. this year, Bernie, is that there is still some power and speed there. But more importantly, the Braves have a new hitting coach in Kevin Seitzer, and I felt like there was a chance that just maybe at the very end of your draft, you could roll the dice on him. If he ends up learning something, making some adjustments and hitting, great. And if he doesn't, you can cut him. Now that he's hurt, I worry that he's not going to steal bases when he comes back.
There you go.
But I also worry that he's going to lose some time and not have as much of an opportunity now to work with Seitzer, and those adjustments could take a lot longer to take effect if he's able to make any at all.
I heard an analyst say this, and I think I told you this before, that he needs to stop taking pitches and start swinging at the first strikes he sees. And I don't know if that's true or not. You know, be a little bit more aggressive. I always thought he was too aggressive. At any rate, regardless of whether he can walk, run, crawl, he is not going to end up on my fantasy team. I've never been a Melvin Upton Jr. fan, and I think there are other guys I'll take before him. So I hope he gets better. I hope the boot comes off. I hope he can run, and I hope he's on your team and not mine.
The sad thing is B.J. Upton was pretty durable, but Melvin doesn't seem to be quite as durable as B.J. was, so it's kind of unfortunate. Maybe he'll go back to B.J. after this injury. Let's move on to some other news items here. A couple more to get to before we start looking at some other topics. Aaron Sanchez stretching out as a starter this spring, and really he could still end up closing for the Jays. That's within the range of possibilities. He's going to start their Grapefruit League opener next week. I'm curious, your thoughts on Sanchez, based on what you've seen so far, do you buy him as a starter in 2015, or do you think the Jays are better served breaking him in as that late-inning reliever and possibly as the closer?
There is no doubt in my mind after I've watched him. And we've talked about these guys in the past, the Scherzers, the Moros. You don't know, are they starters or are they relievers? This is a guy, Sanchez, who I would put in the bullpen for the entire year, not even think of putting him in the rotation. Let him work on two or three pitches, not four, not five. Get his command done. I think he's a setup man and a closer, either or. And I think by the end of the year, he closes if he doesn't start there. Very good mechanics, very good mound presence. Does tend to get a little bit wild at times when he stretches out his repertoire. I like him best in the eighth or ninth inning, and I think eventually you can put him in the rotation Chris Sale type. This is a guy with a very good arm and a good demeanor. He's my eighth or ninth inning guy right now.
You know, the downside for me with Sanchez as a starter is that he's another Trevor Cahill type.
Yeah, exactly.
Which scares some people off. But the thing about them that I think is a little bit similar is that Sanchez throws that heavy two-seamer and it moves so much that I think he has difficulty commanding that pitch sometimes. That's when he runs into trouble and starts walking guys. In the bullpen last year, that wasn't as much of an issue. It kind of makes me wonder, I just stumbled into this conclusion right now, why doesn't Trevor Cahill try short relief? I mean, he's signed to an expensive contract, so that's part of it, but that's the kind of thing I could see happening with Cahill. I could see him moving to the pen and actually being a pretty good short reliever if some team ever decided to go that route. Now, Sanchez might have better secondary stuff. I think that's where the difference can be, but it's a similar problem that Cahill has had really throughout his career that Sanchez had as a minor league starter.
Well, the Diamondbacks are sorting through 14 guys right now for their rotation. You know, it's an unbelievable amount of arms they're looking at right now. So who knows where Cahill's going to end up. They still owe him money, but there are other guys that are going to be ahead of him. He did pitch out of the pen last year and pitched very well, and then he didn't pitch very well, came back into the rotation, pitched very well, then didn't pitch very well. It's the inconsistency that drives you crazy. The guy that reminds me of Sanchez could be Carlos Carrasco, who went into the pen, worked on two or three pitches, started throwing strikes. Remember, Carrasco's issue was command and control. Went into the pen, found himself, and now finds himself in the rotation a year later. That's what I see in Sanchez.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because I think those are probably that's the range. If things go well, he becomes Carlos Carrasco second half of last year. Everything comes together, whether that's this year, next year, who knows when for Aaron Sanchez. That could happen. And if it never comes together, like Cahill is that downside. Like that's a pretty wide range, but the upside alone is why a team like Toronto would be patient with him and want to stretch him out and try to get 180 and 200 innings from him annually.
It's a smart thing to do. I mean, if he stretched out, he could start. And then they have all month to decide. They have more than that. They can start the season with him anywhere. This is a great asset to have. But I mentioned Scherzer because the Diamondbacks really debated where to slot this guy. Ninth inning or in the rotation. That's the type of arm that takes time to get the command and control. You've heard me say it 2 to 3 years. And now look at Scherzer. Look at where he is. I'm not saying Sanchez is Scherzer, but he's a similar type guy to me.
I think that's a fair statement. Remember when Scherzer, I believe it was during his first year with the Tigers, got sent down to Toledo for a couple starts? Remember when that happened?
I can't say I do, but I'm sure it did because I know how long it takes for pitchers to get those two C's, the command and control, in check.
I mean, look at his path again. His first 3 years in Detroit, 2010, he was 25 years old, Max Scherzer, 350 ERA, 125 whip, not bad, just kind of like mid-rotation guy that could strike some guys out, 184 Ks at about 195 and two-thirds. Following year in 2011, the ERA jumped to 443, the whip jumped to 135, Tigers stuck with him. 2012, strikeouts came, 231 strikeouts in 187 and two-thirds, but still a high threes ERA at 374, a 127 whip. At that point, did anybody expect him to have a Cy Young season in 2013? Probably not.
That happened to Corey Kluber. That happened with Ricky Porcello. You know, these young guys who find it. Now, I'm not saying Porcello is Scherzer, but Porcello watched Scherzer. He watched Verlander. He knows how to pitch now. He's not a baby anymore. I think he's going to be the ace of the Red Sox staff. That's how much I now believe in Ricky Porcello.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question I would have with Porcello is, do you see any sort of growth with the strikeout rate? Do you see a jump to 7.5 or 8 strikeouts per 9, or do you think he's always going to be more of that ground ball heavy profile?
The worry I have about him is that monster in left field and the short wall. I think that could spook him, and I hope it doesn't. I hope it doesn't scare him off. Because when he throws all his breaking balls that get sink on him, you know, he induces ground balls. I think more ground balls than strikeouts. But when he, you know, when he hangs it, it's going to hit that monster. So, you know, I'm not saying he's a top 10 pitcher now. I just like the incremental growth of Rick Porcello having been around Verlander and Scherzer and learning how to throw those breaking balls. He's going to be a master at it.
Yeah, and speaking of the Blue Jays, we kind of started that topic looking at Aaron Sanchez. Some news that came down yesterday for the Blue Jays, pretty disappointing. Michael Saunders has suffered a torn meniscus in his knee. He's going to be out until the All-Star break, which is just a devastating blow for Saunders and the Jays. Now, they've got a lot of depth offensively, but they're a little thin in terms of viable corner outfield options. I would think they're either going to have to make some kind of free agent signing or possibly a trade. They don't have a lot depth-wise. I threw this out there. I was talking to Clay Link a little earlier today in the office, and I said, what about the Diamondbacks? They need a catcher.
Maybe Connor Navarro.
Yeah, Navarro could go to Arizona. Maybe like an Ender Inciarte goes back the other way. You know, a player like that. Just because the Diamondbacks have that little bit of extra depth right now in the outfield. I mean, could you see that possibly being a fit? Maybe San Diego, they've got extra outfielders. Maybe Dion Viciado, who's a free agent right now. I mean, there's a couple of options for the Jays, but I think they have to do something because they don't have enough depth to get by with what's in camp right now.
See, this is something I don't understand. How do you go into the season with the lack of depth that they have in the outfield and the wealth of catching that they have? Now, I'm not their general manager, but this is another issue where lack of depth has come to bite a team like it did the Dodgers. I think Navarro is probably their best trade chip. I think the Diamondbacks make sense, but they're not going to give up anybody. Because I'm going to give you a flash here, DVR. I'm getting more and more convinced about this every day. Peter O'Brien is going to be the Diamondbacks catcher maybe by June or July. That's soon. He is just killing it in the practice sessions right now, and his defense is improving. So I am very bullish on Peter O'Brien, and I'm not sure they need Navarro with O'Brien waiting in the wings. So I do think that the Blue Jays have to go somewhere, maybe to San Diego. Somebody is going to trade them an outfielder because I don't think Dion Viciado is the answer.
Peter O'Brien is interesting to me because he's hit pretty much everywhere he's been. He's shown good power. Is he kind of like another Willian Rosario, but maybe because he's younger, there's still that chance that he can learn to be a more competent defender, whereas with Rosario, that ship has probably sailed by now. Maybe
that
O'Brien can figure it out.
Comp, D. That is a terrific comp. He really hits... Well, he hits for more power than Rosario at this age, but the defense is very similar.
Yeah, see, like I think it's just a matter of how much the Diamondbacks are willing to tolerate. But until they find a more established option, I don't buy Tuffy Ghostwish as the starter there. I mean, I think he's an okay backup, but they just don't have an option right now. So unless they make a move, I think O'Brien could be up sooner than that, Bernie. I mean, if you had to put a percentage chance on it, where do you put it, Peter O'Brien, as an opening day roster piece for them? Is it 10, 20%?
No, I don't think he breaks camp with them. I don't know. It's too early. But every report I get from everyone says the guy is lights out. And I saw him all spring. I mean, all fall. And I loved what I saw. I saw him hit a ball to dead center field that's still flying. So that part of his game is not the issue. The issue is, can he throw out runners? Can he call a game? Can he block balls? You know, that's what we have to find out. And they're happy. So they're not going to win the division. Do you start his clock now or do you wait? I think more later in the season than right away. That's now. I'll let you know in a month.
I don't think O'Brien is expensive enough in arbitration to where you worry as much about service time. I don't think he's a star level player. I think he's a good player with where power is going to be something he brings to the table. But I think if they believe he's their best option, they should let him break camp. It's not like
you're
a Chris Bryant situation.
You're right. I guess bottom line is this. It doesn't matter when, if it's April, May, June, or July, we're going to see Peter O'Brien this season. He is a draftable player for you at catcher.
A good bench option that maybe becomes a surprising number two, I think, as the season rolls along. A couple more news items to get to here, Bernie. Alex Meyer could be used as a reliever if he doesn't win the Twins' number five starter job this spring. I have seen such a wide range of possible outcomes on Meyer, probably even wider than Aaron Sanchez. I've seen some suggest that if everything clicks, he's a frontline starter, a true ace. I've seen others suggest that he's going to be a very good reliever for a very long time. Most likely it's something in the middle, but what do you think about Meyer and his potential value for 2015?
I'm not very excited after I've seen a lot of him. He's a big kid, and a lot of moving parts. And if he can repeat his delivery more consistently, I think he'll be better. But those arms and legs come flying open. He's got some work to do, and he needs coaching. So not quite there yet, but very good potential.
Got one more spring training-related item I want to get to. Then we're going to open up the mailbag. We got some other topics we'll save for next week, if only because this episode would be like 2 hours long otherwise, and unfortunately I can't record for 2 hours today. But this is kind of from the Never Say Never file. Jesus Montero shows up at Mariners camp, looking trim, completely rejuvenated in terms of just his general disposition. This is a guy that was supposed to be can't miss as a prospect. Great hit tool, plenty of power. The bat was going to play regardless of whether he could catch or not as a prospect. Obviously not a catcher anymore. Trying to break through at first base. Played mostly at first base last year at AAA Tacoma. If you're looking at the end game in grass ball, maybe the $1, $2, $3 player at the end, or possibly a reserve pick, is Jesus Montero someone you're thinking about? Because there was a point where everything was so encouraging that you just can't completely give up on him.
I'm looking at $1 for him because I'm not sure what their first base situation is going to look like. And he's got a good shot because he is more trim. The bat could be quicker. His attitude is better. And they're going to give him every opportunity. They made a big trade for him. They gave up Michael Pineda for him. And they want him to succeed. So, yeah, I'd throw a buck in and on.
And I think when you're looking at Jesus Montero, I mean, part of the appeal is that he's playing behind Logan Morrison. Logan Morrison's just had a very difficult time staying on the field as a big league player. So the path to get regular at-bats really is not very obstructed with Montero. If he has to completely turn things around, he might get that opportunity at some point this year if Lomo goes down. Let's open up the Short Hops mailbag this week here, Bernie. At Short Hops on Twitter, if you have questions for next week, definitely send them our way, at Bernie Pleskoff and at Derek Van Riper. Steve wants to know, what are your thoughts on Micah Johnson?
You know, I'll tell you what. I thought Micah Johnson would be in the hunt with Carlos Sanchez for the second base job with the White Sox, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think Micah Johnson, who's 24 years old, I believe, 2 years older than Carlos Sanchez. He had .275 with 12 stolen bases, left-handed hitter. I think he had a hamstring problem last year. I'm not sure about that. I think that we may see him in 2015, but I think Carlos Sanchez gets the job out of spring training.
I can see Emilio Bonifacio kind of sharing that job with Sanchez and being the typical utility player that he is. I think Johnson may be a player to keep in mind for keeper leagues and probably second half of this year or 2016 before he can use that speed at the big league level. And I think you're right. I think he was playing hurt last year. Question here from CTM Baseball. What do you think about David Peralta entering 2015? Of course, a big part of that, Yasmani Tomas still getting look at third base, but Diamondbacks are expected to make a decision in mid-March as far as whether or not that's going to hold up for the regular season.
A lot depends on where Tomas ends up. If Tomas is at third base, Peralta plays left field. If not, then it's going to be a big problem because Tomas will be in the outfield. And then they still have Enciarte. But I think David Peralta is the real deal. He's an extremely good contact hitter, doesn't strike out a lot, doubles hitter. I think he's a very good fantasy option, but you have to look at where Tomas is going to play. First of all, he will play. You know, eventually he may not. I think he breaks camp with them, but will it be in the outfield or will it be at third base? So far this spring, a little slow in the reaction time at third base, little tough coming in on grounders, good arm, solid, accurate arm. I just got a report on him today from a colleague of mine. Everything looks really good, except he's not polished. They have half a month to figure it out.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really difficult decision for them to make in such a short amount of time. But in the event that Tomas has to play the outfield, I could definitely see one of those outfielders, Peralta or Ender Inciarte, being moved because you really lose quite a bit if you have to have both those guys sitting on your bench. One more question here. This one's from KB Sports. I like the idea of 154 games by the commissioner. What about realignment? I mean, I guess the gist of the question here, Bernie, do you expect the season to be adjusted in terms of length, or do you see realignment coming, or does that really hinge more on whether or not any teams move in the next few seasons?
I think, first of all, if it goes to 154 games, and I don't think the owners will permit that, but let's say it did, then you're going to have a seven-game playoff series in every series. No more shortened series. They will make up for that time and revenue by adding on to the postseason. I don't see the owners giving up those games during the year. I don't see TV rights saying, let's go 154 instead of 161 or 162. It's not going to happen, in my estimation. It could. That's not the answer. The answer is not too many games. The answer is, what do you do when there's a runner on first and the pitcher throws over nine times? You can't control that. What do you do when you change pitchers every batter? You can't control that. It is what it is. Enjoy the game for what it is. Maybe these new rules will stick, but the 3-hour game is with us. You either love it or you don't.
Yeah, and I think as far as realignment goes, that second part of the question, I don't see a reason why the commission would change divisions unless there's a change where something like, I don't know, the Rays move to Montreal or something along those lines. I think we're a few years away from seeing more realignment. I mean, maybe if they're, I haven't heard anything about expansion in a long time. I mean, if two more teams were added, I think you'd have four divisions of four teams potentially, maybe bigger divisions, two of eight in each league. But I haven't heard anything like that in quite some time, so I guess I'm not expecting anything in the way of realignment in the near future.
I'm not either. And I think eventually, I've said this before, maybe 15 years from now, we'll have a team in Cuba, we'll have a team in Mexico. But in terms of, I do think franchises will move. I think one of them will be Tampa. But as I said the other day at our hot stove lunch, I think they'll go to Montreal, but then somebody said, where will they play? And that's an issue.
Yeah, the stadium issue in Montreal, certainly a big one, but at the same time, for an owner willing to find a way to help foot the bill, could be a huge potential growth opportunity to get a team back in Montreal. Risky if you have to front a lot of that money yourself, given the cost of stadiums, but just seems like a place we're going to see baseball again at some point, whether that's 10 years from now, 20 years from now, I have no idea, but I get the feeling that the Expos will return at some point.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Got one quick update on a topic we talked about earlier in the show. I just saw it scroll by on my screen. Michael Saunders actually had 70% of his meniscus removed,
Oh, no.
which it sounds like a bad thing because long term it increases his chances to have arthritis post playing career. But what it does in the short term, it actually shortens up that recovery time. His recovery time is now 4 to 6 weeks, so it actually looks a lot like the Victor Martinez timetable. We can see
Wow.
Saunders back in mid-April for the Blue Jays, so perhaps they will hold on to what they have. Maybe it's Andy Dierks and Kevin Pillar and guys like that ultimately filling in left field until Saunders comes back.
Possibly, and he stepped on a sprinkler in the outfield, and that's so scary. That's happened more than once, and you would think it would be corrected by now. Horrible injury, and it was unnecessary, but that is good news. So, thanks for sharing.
All right, so let's close things out here, Bernie, and talk about what's coming up. What do you have coming up over at MLBpipeline.com and MLB.com as we move through the early weeks of spring training?
Well, the last installments of On the Cusp will be up on MLBpipeline.com. I will be starting out at spring training next Wednesday. I'll take my first look at the new Oakland Park, which was the Cubs' home park, HoHoCam. It's been totally refurbished for the Athletics. I'll be there to see the Giants next Wednesday. I'll be tweeting out every day in spring training at Bernie Pleskov.
Give Bernie a follow. Give us a follow at Short Hopped. I'm at Derek Van Riper. Again, if you have mailbag questions for next week, hit us up on Twitter. Use the hashtag mailbag. That way we know it's actually a question for the podcast and not a question that you'd hope to have answered online in the more immediate future. Sponsorships for this podcast can be obtained through shannon@rotowire.com. Views and opinions of Short Hops are those of Derek and Bernie and no other entity. If you'd like to check out RotoWire for free for the next 10 days, you can do that by going to rotowire.com/pod. Bernie, it's been a pleasure as always. Look forward to doing it again next week.
Talk to you next week, DVR, probably from a ballpark somewhere near me.
Sounds pretty good. Thanks for listening to Short Hops, everybody. We'll be back with you next week.